is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Charles Spicer. The book is Coffee with Hitler, the untold story of the amateur spies who tried to civilize the Nazis. Again, our heroes. Graham Christie, the World War I flying ace, a magnificent hero who provides really good information, perhaps because the German, the Luftwaffe, and Hermann Göring recognize a fellow knight of the air. But in any event, there is also Conwell Evans, whose information, based on his connection to the fellowship, is also very good, and also his long-standing relationship with von Ribbentrop, now the foreign minister of a country at war with the rest of Europe. And then there is Ernest Tennant, who is quite bravely gone behind German lines or gone into territory where he could have been arrested or detained or just disappeared. It is now the so-called Boer War. The American press eventually called it the phony war, the Sitzkrieg, they called it at the time, because though Germany had overrun Poland very quickly and its ally, Russia, the Soviet Union, had overrun the other half of Poland. And we know now that the Germans started their mass murder campaign against the Jews and others right away in Poland. And against in the Baltic states, the Russians, the Soviets, started brutalizing the population right away. However, it is the Boer War from the point of view of London and Washington and Paris. But our heroes are still very active. We begin with September of 1939. Right away, the Oster conspiracy is again being talked about by Conwell Evans. Christie knows about it. There are meetings, in fact, in Switzerland in October to talk about a replacement government. Charles, I want to emphasize this again and again, because you have provided material that other historians have been pioneers on about the German opposition. And you make the point in the closing chapters of your book that right after the war and through the 50s and 60s and maybe really now until the balance of the 20th century, there was suspicion that that there were Germans against Hitler. There was the presumption that all Germans were guilty and that this was post-war rationalizing. I believe the case is made that, at least in the Oster conspiracy, that that is not accurate. Have I read you correctly, Charles?
Absolutely. And I think the 38 Oster conspiracy was the one that had the most chance of success. Because, you know, put simply, they had arranged for the Berlin police force to come on side, and all of the infantry units stationed around Berlin. So the idea of arresting Hitler in Berlin looks like it would have been executable, if you see what I mean, because it would be very difficult for anyone to come to his rescue if you had the entire police force and the army on the region on your side. And they were nixed by Chamberlain coming on his aeroplane, because that robbed the conspiracy of its casus belli, where they needed Hitler to have attacked Czechoslovakia in order to have given them that credibility.
But they begin again even after war breaks out. The conversations continue. Conwell Evans and, well, let's go. The Koch brothers are not to be deferred. And so let's go to the very brave Koch brother, November 1939. There is a plan in place to remove Hitler, but the plan is not going forward because the war is underway. So Erich and Theo Kort come up with a plan to assassinate the dictator. And Erich Kort has access to the Reich Chancellery because he's a senior diplomatic official. And he plans to use a bomb that he's going to get from the Abwehr. These are fantastic. The Abwehr is German intelligence. Mm-hmm. These are fantastic concepts that were moving along at a blinding pace. And accident of history, there was an attack, a bomb on to assassinate the Führer right before Erich Kort was in position to use his bomb. A man by the name of Elser, Georg Elser, who was described as a carpenter, sets a bomb. This is on the anniversary of the German putsch many years before the beer hall putsch. And Hitler is there that day, but he leaves early. And so the building, a wall collapses, the roof collapses, people are killed, but not the dictator. To go over the ground again, there is no demonstrated connection between Elser and Kort and the Oster conspiracy. Is that correct, Charles?
That is correct, indeed.
So Elser is a completely independent event that intervenes when Kort's plan is going forward. Kort then doesn't get the materials from the Abwehr, the German intelligence lab that does explosions, is going to provide him the bomb to kill the dictator. He then decides he's going to go forward with a pistol, but he's told that's madness. So it's called off, but the Oster people will not disappear. We now go to Christie. Christie meets with Goering. And we haven't explored Goering very much because he's a evil character. But in any event, London regarded Goering as a possible replacement to Hitler. This long into the war, the war's been going on for several. There's a state of war between these countries, and they're looking to Goering. Does Christie believe that Goering could replace the dictator?
He certainly sees that it would have been preferable. He realizes Goering's pretty evil. He's no longer defending him. He's not claiming friendship anymore. But I think his argument would be that he would have been better than Hitler, or we would have been able to better position to have a negotiated peace.
The meetings between Christie and Goering. Goering, as you present him, is on both sides. I can do it, but no, again, we're not going. I'm not going to have anything to do with London. That was something he maintained at the Nuremberg trials in 1945 to 46, that same line of being on both sides. What is your opinion of Goering, or what is the general understanding of Goering long afterwards? Was he ever sincere at any point about providing an alternative to Hitler?
I think he would have relished the opportunity to provide, to be an alternative to Hitler. And he probably would have been more amenable to the British. I also think he may have been less dangerous internationally, less ambitious than Hitler was. He might have been more realistic diplomatically. But that's taking us down sort of rabbit hole of what-if-ery alternative history, which is quite potentially quite dangerous, and I think everyone will have their own opinion. Sadly, what became clear to even to Christie is he was playing both sides against. He was an opportunist, so he was playing both sides against the middle.
And the activities of Ernest Tennant are always necessary to follow. He is in close contact with Christie and Conwell Evans, but he is taking direction from Vansittart, and we've learned from Horace Wilson. So Ernest Tennant is a well-to-do man with opportunities, I mean, with business contacts everywhere, and that was the original idea of the fellowship. He makes a mission to Norway. Is this when he had to disguise himself, I believe, because he was at risk?
Coming back, yes, he gets exposed. He gets spotted.
And all of these activities, as they're going on, they're seeking a way to stop the war or to come to an armistice or talks. Is that also in the air? Because they're all three of them are being brave. Christie moves right up to the German border. Conwell Evans, it's no longer safe for Conwell Evans to go to Berlin, I believe. So he has to do this through contacts, the Kort's network contacts. But they're very active and providing, again, really good information. And that reaches the Prime Minister and Horace Wilson. And yet still, they do not see the scale of the threat. Is that correct, Charles?
I think that's correct in the lead up to the war, yes.
All right, we need now to turn to the crisis itself for London, which is the British Expeditionary Force is on the continent in conjunction with the French Army and the Belgian Army. They presume that they've established a line that Hitler can't cross. That presumption will disappear in May of 1940. The book is Coffee with Hitler, the untold story of the amateur spies who tried to civilize the Nazis. Charles Spicer is the author. I'm John Batchelor.